Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Bubblequake. When we come back. Well, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights of great and small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures of great and small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have." That's cited from Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16. Well, you know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution, at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin, a tender, in payment of debts." But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took our silver coin out of circulation. Then, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks to the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system. They gave us Federal Reserve notes on just weights and balances in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today, we are now the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that I teach in my business school that we conduct here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like to learn more, call and order my free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call right now and order one. The number to call, 417-273-4967. The business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we're reviewing a book called Bubblequake. Actually, the title is America's Bubble Economy. It's written by a guy named David Wiedemeyer, Ph.D., David Wiedemeyer, W-I-E-D-E-M-E-R, published by Wiley & Sons. Probably get a copy at Barnes & Noble. I don't know what the price is, probably $20 or $25. Well worth the money, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised by some of the good, down-to-earth, logical and reasonable principles that this guy puts forth. Now, he's an everyday, ordinary, garden-variety economist. Nothing wild-eyed or fanatical or right-wing about this guy. He's just an average run-of-the-mill guy. Now, he's going to get into some gold and silver here in a little bit. But last time, he gave us five basic thou shalt nots. I'll run them by you quickly. One, two, three, four, five. He said, number one, avoid all real estate purchases except for personal use. That's your own personal home. Avoid stocks like the plague. And that was number two. Avoid long-term bonds. And you shall avoid all evil adjustable rate debt. You know, your credit cards, where you've got an adjustable rate. Today they're charging you 15%. If you fail to make a payment next month, it'll jump to 27%. That's what we call adjustable rate. You're not locked into 10% or 15% or 5%. It's just whatever the creditor wants to charge you. And then finally, you shall not depend upon fixed payment pensions. You know, if you're on Social Security and you're poor and you're old and you're just living from hand to mouth over here, it's time for you to go back to work. That's where reality is located. We're going into a period of hyperinflation. We're going into a period of declining asset values. Declining asset values and hyperinflation. Sounds like an oxymoron. The first thing you get here is these crazy prices. And they're expanding the economy by 11.7%. And it takes about 18 to 36 months for that inflation that's being created in 2007 to hit the marketplace in 2008, 9, and 10, along in there. And no doubt in 2008, they'll still be expanding the money supply. And when that occurs, you have a rapidly depreciating value of the dollar. Government will pay its debts with depreciating dollars, which means that a loaf of bread that costs a dollar today will cost $2, $4, $8, $16, $32, and $64. That means that your pension, your Social Security pension, or your United Airlines pension, or whatever you're getting, your fixed income, has to expand by that inflationary amount, and they never do. So you're going to take it in the shorts. So it's up to you to avoid that today. So if you want to avoid it, get after it. If you don't, well, sit back and relax. So those are the five. Now he says, beyond survival, cashing in on the coming bubble quake. Covering your assets is absolutely essential and should not be put off for too long. Let me pause right there. God, I couldn't have said it better myself. Covering your assets is absolutely essential and it should not be put off for too long. Boys and girls, your job is an asset. Your home is an asset. Your automobile is an asset. Now, some of these assets may be leveraged out so far that they're actually liabilities. Suppose you got a car and you're making a $500 a month payment on this car. And this car isn't worth as much as you could sell it for today. Suppose you can sell it for $10,000 today, but you owe $12 on it. That's not an asset. That's a liability. And that $500 a month that you're putting out, it better be spent. Get rid of the car. Pay off that $2,000. Eat it. And buy yourself a car that you own free and clear. You know, I've got a couple of them here. You know, I own them. If the economy goes to hell tomorrow, okay. And if the value of the cars drops in half, my $10,000 car drops to $5,000. So, okay, so big deal. But I'm not making that $500 a month payment, which I'm going to need every dollar that I'm getting coming in to be buying things that are more important than making that car payment. So if you've got one of those vanity cars, you know, you're just driving around because it makes you feel real good, yeah, you'll be smarting for that at some point in time in the future. Same thing with your house. You got a $100,000 house, you got a $50,000 mortgage on it. Sell the house, collect the $50,000, take the $50,000 and go buy something that you can afford. Own it free and clear. Or rent. Rent. Go live with mom and dad and do something. Every dollar that you can save and put away into an asset that is appreciating in value will give you an edge up when it comes time to come in and buy in the marketplace. The objective here, get out, get cash, get liquid. Liquid that hangs or holds on to its value, hangs on to its value so that you can come back into the marketplace and buy for 5 cents on the dollar. That's coming. And there will be people that are holding their assets until they're worth 5 cents on the dollar, and then I'm going to come in and buy it. Now, let me tell you a little story here. I was a kid about 15 years old working for an old Portuguese guy named Frank Rocha. Big flood came through the Yellow River Valley, silted all the fields, knocked out all the bridges, couldn't get hay. The neighbor, who was a grade A operation, is milking a cow to the acre and buying his hay from Tracy, California. Old Frank is milking one cow to 3 acres, making his own hay. He's got 650 tons of hay sitting in the barn. Had a pretty good year in 55. But they're in 54, rather. 55 flood comes along and wipes out all of this hay-making capacity. And the neighbor who can't get hay comes over to Frank and says, hey, Frank, sell me some hay. Frank says, I haven't got any hay to sell. And the guys just were standing in the barn. Well, Frank's hay in the mow is up to the eaves. I mean, it's up to the head rafters. And he says, well, God, Frank, your barn's full of hay. I'm out of hay, and I need help right now. And Frank said, I haven't got any hay to sell. And so they had heated words, and the neighbor left. And, you know, being a good communist trained in the public school system, I asked Frank, how come you're not sharing and sharing alike? You know, like we've all been taught to do from little children up. You know, you share your toys. We don't want any private property here. And so he said, well, being a capitalist pig and all, I don't have any hay to sell because, see, I've got 40 calves, 40 yearlings, and 5 or 6 bulls, and I need 650 tons of hay. And I said, well, gee, you're only going to feed out 2.5 tons per head. So you got hay left over. And he said, did you take a look at the fields that are all silted in? Next year, we're not going to be able to make hay. The hay that we got here has to carry us through 56 and 57. So here we are in 55 feeding out our hay. We got to have a 3-year supply here, son. And whatever hay we'll be able to make next year and the year after is going to be skimpy. Now, that's what's coming up here. Now, most of you people don't have to deal with hay and planning for 3 years into the future. But now's the time to start looking at planning 3 years into the future, because that's about the time that it takes for this inflation, all of this excess liquidity that's being spent, all this money that the government's borrowing on this war in Iraq. That's going to come home to roost. Those chickens, you know, have to come home to roost at some point in time. And that's going to hit us with inflation. Inflation is where these prices grow dramatically. 79 was a case in point, where interest rates went up to 21%. And we're liable to see interest rates at 50 or 75 or 100%. So pay attention. There's more to come. Once this step is taken care of, you and your assets will be free to move into the really exciting part of the coming bubble quake. And unlike any other bubble crash, in which all you can hope for is to not take too big a loss, this bubble crash provides something truly unique. The opportunity to jump off of one set of falling bubbles and to catch a ride up on some other rising bubble, like commodities. Taking advantage of the many money-making opportunities ahead will require an open mind, some liquid assets, and the willingness to look into 3 potential treasure chests full of tools for milking this bubble quake for all it's worth. Below is an overview of each of these big profit-making opportunities, followed by a more detailed discussion of how you can customize your approach to suit your own particular financial situation and personal degree of risk tolerance. So as a reminder, Please note that we've already warned you to avoid most stocks and real estate like the plague. These are the two areas where most of your friends and colleagues are going to take the biggest initial hit. People may not necessarily understand why you're getting out of stocks and the real estate in the next couple of years, but don't let your investment decisions become a popularity contest. Make your own well-reasoned decisions. After the bubbles pop, you're going to look like a genius. And of course, that's what Russell Harvey looked like. I'm sure that by the time the stock market collapsed in 1929-30, old Russell Harvey looked like he was some kind of a financial genius. How did you know? Well, listen to this. Guys like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett are getting out of dollars and into euros. Now, what does that tell you? If you take a look, I think there was a survey just the other day, 168 top corporate executives. What are their buying habits and stocks? They are selling stocks. They're selling their stocks at the rate of around 150 or 180 to 1. For every stock they're buying, they're selling 150 or 60 stocks. What's that tell you? It tells you that the chief financial officers are getting off the ship. They're abandoning ship. Now, I'm not a Warren Buffett, and I'm not a Bill Gates, and I'm not one of these big chief corporate executives, but my common sense tells you, hey, listen, if these guys are bailing out of the stock market, then there's probably a pretty good reason for it. They don't have very good confidence in it. And then they go on here to tell you here in the book that there's a thing called a price-earnings ratio. That's your P.E. ratio. Now, the price of the stock is $50, and the earnings ratio is $2. That means that it's got a P.E. of 25 to 1. Many stocks are at 25 to 1, 20 or 25 to 1. That means you're going to have to keep that stock for 20 years for the dividends to pay it off. So you're going to invest $10,000 in the stock and wait 20 years for this stock to pay you back the $50 that you paid for it? My God, kids, every 25 years, the value of your money is cut in half. Now, use the rule of 72. And you take this 72 and divide that by 11.7. And that means that it doubles every 6.15 years. Every 6 years, it doubles. That's called geometric progression. If you take inflation at 11.7% a year, over the next 6 years, the value of your dollar is going to drop in half. You're going to have a 50% cut in the purchasing power of your dollar over the next 6 years. So you take $50 today, and you invest it in stocks that are going to take 25 years, 6, 12, 18, 24, 25 years to double. By the time your stock doubles from $50 to $100, the purchasing power of your dollar is going to be 12 cents. So you're going to have this $100, which will buy $12 worth of goods. Do you want to invest $50 so that you can lose $38 over the next 25 years? That's crazy. But, you know, that's the way people are. They go to college, and they learn to be economists, and they learn to be financial wizards and experts, and then they get into stocks and bonds, and they invest in that kind of crap. There's no profit in that. Now, we can do better than that as a truck driver. But, you know, people are thinking in terms of constant dollars. And it's true. At the end of 25 years, this guy's going to have $100. But what will the $100 buy? $12 worth of goods. So your $50, after it's waited 25 years, is now going to buy $12 worth of goods. And that's assuming that you make your $50 off of it. And then you got to pay taxes on all of those dividends. You know, after you pay these taxes and all the crap, not only is it a loser, it's a preposterous investment. Now, covering your assets is absolutely essential, and you should not put it off for too long. So once this step is taken care of for you and your assets will be free to move into the only into really exciting part of the coming bubble quake, and that is profits. Taking advantage of many money-making opportunities ahead will require an open mind and some liquid assets. So tuck that one away in your heart. You got to have a little cash. And that's because when people are desperate for money, they discount their assets. So the guy that's sitting over here, and this happens all the time, this guy over here, he's bought this car. Now all of a sudden he's lost his job and he can't keep the payments. He's got this deficiency payment he's got to make. So now he's got this car, and maybe the car is worth $10,000. But he has to sacrifice this car at a loss. Maybe he'll sell it for $7,000 or $8,000. So you come along and you offer him five cash. And you pull out your roll of money and you say, okay, I'll give you $5,000 cash. He says, nah, I got to have eight. Well, I'm sure that's what you got to have. But that's not what I'm paying. It's not what I'm offering. Now, just multiply that by thousands of desperate people all bidding lower and lower to get your $5,000. Pretty soon there'll be somebody says, well, I'll sell my car for four. Another guy says, well, I'll sell my car for three. When people are desperate for cash, you know, then the guy that's got the cash is king. And this is the old adage that he who has the gold makes the rules. Always remember that. He who has the gold makes the rules. And that's where liquidity comes in. So if you've got this house over here that you could have sold today and taken $50,000 out of it, which would have been your seed money for making these deals, you know, buying this $10,000 car for $3,000. You know, you can't do that if your money's tied up in your house and you're scrambling to make payments on it. Pretty soon you become desperate. Hey, listen, I'll sell you this house, and it's got a $50,000 mortgage on it. Well, watch this. The bank, when they foreclose on you, will put that house on the market, and you may get that house for $25,000. You know, these big prices that you're watching in houses today, let me tell you where reality is at. If you take a big Victorian house, you know, these nice, big, old, turn-of-the-century Victorian houses, about 11, 12 rooms. Well, those houses were built for and sold for $7,000 when they were new. $7,000 in $20 gold pieces. So let me just take 7,000, divide that by 20. That was 350 ounces of gold. 350 ounces. Today, you take that same 350 ounces times 600, and you got $210,000. And that's just about where the median price for houses is right now, nationwide, about $200,000 to $220,000, about the same, 350 ounces. So these houses that you people are selling today for $200,000 to $300,000 are the same, you know, nice houses, turn of the century to 1920, that were selling for $7,000 in 1927. Okay, but those $7,000 houses in 1927 were selling for $4,000 or $3,500 in 1944, because my grandmother in 1944 bought one for $4,400, or, you know, in round numbers, about half price. Now, the key to this is that you sell your $7,000 house in 1927 and come back into the marketplace and buy that house for $3,500 when the market collapses in real estate. And you can double your money. You double your assets. You take your rental properties today, kids, and sell them. Get rid of them. Convert it to cash. Hang on to the cash in the form of gold. Wait until the real estate market goes down by 50%, then come back into the market and buy two houses. Sell one, come back and buy two. Sell two, come back and buy four. Now, now is not the time to be buying real estate, save for your own personal home. If you're an apartment renter, you got a little cash. I had a student the other day, moved here from San Jose, and he's retiring. He's getting out of the post office. He's got some bucks in his pocket. He was paying $1,250 a month rent in San Jose. He came here, and he bought a house. And he paid $100,000 for this house. It's a beat-up old house, but, you know, he can fix it for $30,000 to $40,000. But now he's going to be in this house for about $130,000. Divide that by $1,200 a month. In 108 months, divided by 12. In 9 years, the money that he saves on the rent is going to pay for that house and all of the improvements that go into it. And he's free and clear. Nobody's going to take the house away from him. He doesn't have to worry about, am I going to have a job, and will my job cover my rent? All right, now, the story is here, you don't want to buy that house as a speculative commodity, but you got to have a place to live. Now, you can either rent or you can buy. And so he bought something he could afford. Pretty good move, I'd say, on his part. Now, let's get something clear right up front. We're not gold bugs like most smart, reasonable people. We don't jump on or off bandwagons based on wishful thinking or a habit of seeing only doom and gloom. Traditionally, the warning to buy gold has been the long-term mantra of the chronically pessimistic. But more recently, however, there's an entirely new, much more optimistic crowd, which is now starting to buy gold also, and for very good reason. You see, prior to and during the coming collapse of America's bubble economy, there are several very compelling arguments for investing in gold. We won't bore you here with more details than you really need to know. As other asset values decline, people want to put their money somewhere. And they want to buy something, preferably something of rising value that has a long tradition of acceptance and a demand during difficult times, and that is gold. As demands continue to rise for gold and then rapidly rises when the other bubbles pop, the price of gold will shoot up. As the price of gold shoots up, gold buying is converted to speculative bubble buying, which ensures that a vast rise due to a typical condition that propel a bubble forward. The rising gold bubble is your very best bet for profits during the coming bubble quake in real estate. Well, will the gold bubble fall back down? Well, of course it will. It's a bubble. All bubbles rise and then bubbles fall. But why not go for the ride while it's going up? This could be one of the longest rides of any bubble, 10, 20, or more years, compared to other assets, such as stocks and bonds. The amount of gold now available is relatively tiny, and you can count on more gold being mined in the future to satisfy growing demand. But demand is going to outpace supply, which will push up the price. Huge and growing demand, relatively tiny supply, all you have to do is do the math. So the gold bugs are right at this juncture of history. The gold bugs are correct. Gold will be a spectacular investment after the bubbles pop and a very good investment before they pop. On the other hand, the gold bugs are wrong. The reasons that gold will be a spectacular investment has nothing to do with some fundamental quality of gold itself, but will primarily result from the other bubbles colliding and popping, the investor interest rationally shifting to gold for a while. Eventually, gold values will collapse just as they did in 1980, making the gold bubble the biggest, baddest financial bubble of the 21st century, which is what happened to it in the last century, in the 1980s. All that will be many years away, though. In the meantime, as the gold bubble goes up, here are the top 12 rational reasons for you to join the gold rush. 12 reasons why. In relation to world stock markets, the world gold market is truly tiny. That means a relatively small movement of capital out of stocks and into gold is going to drive gold up prices up massively. Right now, in the world today, there are $45 trillion invested in stocks. There's only $500 billion worth of gold out there. That's a ratio of 90 to 1. When those stocks decline, just a small amount, $1 trillion, moved out of stocks into gold will just drive gold wild. That's what happened the last time in 1980 when interest rates shot up to 20%. God, the price of gold just went through the roof. So you take advantage of that. And the place to be today is out of real estate, out of stocks, and into gold, to hang on to the gold until the gold shoots up. Take advantage of the capital gain that you make. And then use that to come back in and buy the depreciated real estate and the depreciated stocks if you're inclined to buy worthless paper. Get after it. But the real estate's not bad. That's a tangible asset. And I want to caution you. It appears from Bible prophecy. Take a look now for yourself in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 that we will be headed into a famine, food shortage. Now, here's a number that ought to just scare the living bejesus out of you. I just learned the other day that the Chinese, that is the mainland Chinese communists, control 27% of the food imports that come into the United States, either through the Panama Canal, through the Port of Long Beach, or in direct exports. 27%. A fourth of all of the food that is imported into the United States is in the hands of our enemies, the Red Chinese. Boys and girls, that's insane on its face, but I don't make the world the way it is. I'm just a reporter here to report to you that that's the way it is. Now, fully half of the food that comes into the United States, or half of the food that we consume here in the United States, is now imported. It's over half now. America, which exports a lot of grain, in a dollar-adjusted scenario in the year 2008, is going to be a net importer of food. That is, in dollar value, the amount of food that we export in the price of grain is not going to be enough to buy the amount of food that we import from France, such as brie cheese and wine. Now, that's not a very good place to be in, and your Creator told you that the day is coming when you're going to have famine. Now, that's going to include you Canadians, Europeans, Australians, and New Zealanders. It may include a lot of people in Thailand and the Philippines and China and Japan as well. But primarily, this great tribulation is aimed at us. We're the guys that are going to take it in the shorts. So I think, just to be prudent, you'd be better advised to have a 4-year supply of food stockpiled as opposed to having a lot of gold and silver stockpiled in place of the food, because while it's true that gold and silver are money and they will be very valuable, you might make a hell of a lot more money selling food. I can't think of a better place to be than food in a famine. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and the biblical law from the scriptural perspective. 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may or may not be endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now, we're offering a new class on health and healing here at the law school, which covers the alternative methods being used for the treatment of healing of such diseases as cancer and Parkinson's disease and multiple sclerosis and many other degenerative diseases that now affect about half of all Americans, and how to prevent these degenerative diseases, and to use the application of essential oils from the Bible, there's 32 of them, super nutrition foods containing more nutrients. And the class will include hands-on teaching, the paperwork, allergic reaction testing, and training so you can do this at home using acupressure application to find the pressure points and to contribute to your good health. The class is coming on February the 5th through the 9th, 5-day school here at Isabella. So if you're interested, then give my wife Jackie a call here for more details. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Remember, my wife is a 28-year cancer survivor. And I guess I ought to plug the book that we're reviewing. That's it's a pretty good book. It's about a 1 in 20 read. And you'll read 20 books before you'll find one like this. So if you were to pick out 20 books over at Barnes & Noble, and I do that. I do read a little. And we read a lot of these books and a lot of forecasters and McIlvany reports and privateers and so on. And there are mainstream economists that have their heads screwed on straight. And this is one of them. And this guy's not religious. He's not going to tell you about Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. He's an evolutionist, and he's going to tell you about evolution and how there's an evolutionary connection here with economics. Some of what he says I don't subscribe to. But then, you know, you're not going to read a book or listen to some guy on the radio that you agree with 100% anyway, are you? I don't. So this is called America's Bubble Economy, Profit When It Pops, John David Wiedemeyer, Wiedemeyer. And you can get it from John Wiley & Sons. So if you're ordering the book, make sure that you get America's Bubble Economy, Profit When It Pops. John Wiley & Sons is the publisher. Five authors are involved in this. Pretty good book. Very comprehensive. Very mainline. And the guy's, you know, got his head screwed on straight. You're going to read 20 books to find one like this. So I've reviewed a lot of books, and I'm going to sort them out, and I'm going to recommend this one here. And he's into talking about gold here, and he's got 12 rules here. For 12 reasons why gold is going to be a top investment. There is 11. I thought I saw 11 here. Now he's got 12 rational reasons to join the gold rush. All right. Remember, that guy's name is John Wiedemeyer, and it's called America's Bubble Economy. John Wiley is the publisher, and you probably get it at Barnes & Noble. All right. Number one, the gold market is very, very small compared to the stock and bond markets. Even a very small shift of capital out of these markets and into gold is going to greatly boost the gold market. Any large inflow of capital into gold will have a very huge positive effect. Two, gold is easily sold for euros, giving investors a double benefit. That means that if you buy gold, you are indirectly buying euros at the same time, which is great because euros will also go up when our bubble economy falls. If gold goes up four times, and the euro goes up two times against the dollar, your net increase will be 4 times 2 equals 8 times. That's not very bad at all. Number three, gold has significant potential for being an illegal tax avoidance technique. Once the bubbles collide, tax rates in the United States and around the world will increase, and incomes will decline. This combination means that interest in tax avoidance, even if that tax avoidance is illegal, is going to skyrocket. Holding physical gold is a very effective way to avoid taxes in the United States and around the world. Now, we here do not, of course, advocate the illegal tax avoidance schemes, but there's no denying that others will find this to be very appealing, which will further boost the demand for and the price of gold. Number four, the gold market is much more of a world market than U.S. stocks and bonds. Foreigners can buy U.S. stocks and bonds, but buying gold is easier. Hence, gold has a much greater world demand. For example, currently India is the world's biggest consumer of gold, and they buy 20% of the world's gold, which is about twice as much as U.S. investors buy. On the other hand, India is not a large consumer of U.S. stocks and bonds. Therefore, the ease in which worldwide investors can buy gold will also heighten its appeal. Plus, gold already is a favorite for many investors in the Middle East and Asia. Now, I'm going to pause right here and make my editorial comments. The world's production of gold is about 2,500 tons a year. The world's sales of gold is about 3,700 tons of gold per year. About 50% more gold is sold than is produced. Now, right away, somebody says, well, that's impossible. No, it isn't. Not at all. And that's because 82% of the gold that is sold on paper. Just like the Federal Reserve is putting out lots of dollars. They just print it up and ship it out. And that's the way gold is sold. 82% of gold is sold on paper. Only 18% of gold is actually moved physically from one person to another. You should be in the physical gold realm, or you should be into the physical gold rather than the paper gold. And it should become very obvious why. When I report this fact, listen up now, write it down. The total amount of gold sold over the past 30 or 40 years equals all of the gold that will be produced for the next 15 years. So gold is already oversold by 15 times annual production. Now, when bankers do this, it's called shorting. There's an old adage that says short bankers are hung from tall trees. Or it's fractional reserving. What they're actually doing is selling more gold than is available. Now, what that means is, those of us that have physical possession of our gold, no matter whether it's one coin or 50 coins, if you got physical possession of it, you're in a cash position. Those of you out there who own gold in the form of paper, and a lot of people do that, they call here and say, well, I've got 1,000 ounces of gold. And I say, well, that's pretty significant. Where do you keep your gold? Well, I keep it at the First National Warehouse, or I keep it at the Franklin Mint Warehouse, or I keep it at this or that warehouse. Well, boys and girls, those warehouses out there have sold that gold now 15 years into the future. So if you called your broker today and said, okay, I got 1,000 ounces, ship it to me, he can do that, and he will. But when the rush on gold occurs, kids, there's going to be thousands of people like you all calling the Franklin Mint and saying, hey, send me my gold, and they don't have it. They've got some gold there, but they don't have enough gold to pay off everybody. They haven't even got enough gold to pay off a significant minority. That's why you got to get ahead of the curve. You can't wait until it's time to cash in, until the markets and the bubbles break. You got to do it in advance with the anticipation that it's going to break. Going on, he says, number five, it's very difficult to rapidly increase gold production. Gold mining will not be able to keep pace with demand for many years. When demand for gold goes up, so will the price. Now, it takes time to bring these gold mines on stream. So the gold mining companies today are creaming their holdings. They're mining the easy stuff first, which makes all the sense in the world. I'm not faulting them for it. I'm just pointing out that they're going through and they're creaming it. Now, 2,500 tons a year was what we were producing in 2000, 2001, and then it dropped off to about 2,400 tons in 2003. And every year, gold production is dropping off. It's now down to around 2,200 tons. South Africa used to produce 500 tons a year. They're producing 300 tons a year. Some of it's political. Some of it's physical. Some of it's, you know, there are a lot of guys that are holding gold or that are mining gold are sitting there saying, hell, the price is $600. It should be $1,600, just like stocks. They're at $12,700 on the Dow. They should be $16,000. Well, a lot of guys that have gold mines are sitting there saying, I'm not going to mine and sell gold at $600 when the correct price is $1,600. And we're on the verge of that $1,600 explosion. So they're not producing today, which is causing an even greater physical shortage. Meanwhile, back on the farm, the Chinese and the Japanese are sitting on $1 trillion worth of worthless American paper, and they're unloading that paper. The oil-producing countries of the Middle East are trading their valuable oil for valueless commercial paper put out by our Federal Reserve, which is a promise to pay someday, which is being eroded 11.7% a year. So when the Saudi Arabians sell a $50 barrel of oil today, times 11.7 means that they're losing $5.85 in purchasing power between January of 2006 and January of 2007. Between January of 2007 and January of 2008, they're going to lose another $5.85 on the sale of that $55 barrel of oil. Hey, kids, they're not going to do that forever. I don't know how long they're going to continue doing it, but there's an end in sight. Number six, gold's value increases with inflation. Inflation will be very high in the United States and also in major European and Asian countries. I'm going to put another arrow there, and I'm going to tell you I disagree. And I disagree with the word value. Gold's price is going to increase with inflation. but the value doesn't necessarily increase. For instance, the price of gold today is double what it was in 2000. It moved up from $300 to $600, but its value didn't go up by 100%. Its value went up by 70%. That's all. Its purchasing power is up. That's true. And that's where you want to be. That's where the profit is. There has been some profit over what it was, but it was already undervalued compared to 1980. So when we take a look at 1971 purchasing power, when America quit paying gold for its balance of payments deficits, 1971, purchasing power is down to 10 cents. Compared to 1930, it's down to 2 cents. Compared to 1980, it's down by 50%. Compared to 2000, it's down by 30%. Come on, kids. We've got to think in terms of purchasing power of the unit of measure. So whether that's just a typographical or a colloquial error there, gold's value increases with inflation. The price increases. The value doesn't. Now, the value will over time, because when it goes up to $1,600 or $3,200 an ounce, there will be some real appreciation in the purchasing power of the dollar, in the purchasing power of a dollar's worth of gold. And it'll go back to its 1930 value. That ounce of gold will actually buy 100 cents on the dollar in 1930 terms. Today, it won't quite do that. Number seven, all of the world's stock and bond markets will be under pressure, and investors will view gold as an excellent alternative. Number eight, if the banking system comes under severe stress, as it likely will, gold will have even further appeal. Number nine, short term, the central banks of the world, which have been selling about 500 tons of gold a year since the 1999 central bank gold agreement, will likely reduce their sales. And in fact, already, some central banks are already buying gold and increasing their gold reserves. And in some cases, instead of buying dollars, 500 tons of gold per year is no small issue, given that South Africa, the world's largest gold producer, only produces about 300 tons a year. So if the central banks significantly reduce gold sales, the supply will drop and prices will increase. Now, I might point out here that that's one of the primary methodologies that the banks have been using to control the price of gold and to hold it below the $732 price that it peaked at in May of 2006. So tuck it away in your heart. See, the major central banks have many, many tons of gold. In fact, I think it's the Federal Reserve Bank, you know, the Fort Knox people, hold 8,000 tons of gold. Now, that's a bunch of gold. That's a bunch of gold. It's either 8,000 tons or 800 tons. I kind of forget now. You get into these numbers and sometimes you get a little confused, at least I do. Maybe my Alzheimer's and old age, but in any event, the biggest gold hoard in the world is here in the United States. And South Africa produces 300 tons a year. They're the biggest producer. The whole world produces 2,500 tons a year. And I think it's the United States. I think it's 800 tons. And we got about a three-year supply here in the United States. We have enough gold in the United States that it would take world production 3 years to equal. And that world production, remember, is slacking off a little, for whatever reason, slacking off. And it's oversold by 15 years into the future. And silver is even worse. Silver is an even better buy than gold for other reasons, and I've talked about that a time or two. But silver is very heavy, bulky, compared to gold. And you got to have a place to put it. And your condominium, you know, in downtown Los Angeles probably isn't a good place. Number 10, short-term South Africa's production fell 15% in 2005. And it isn't clear if declines will continue at this rate. But clearly, South African production will not increase anytime soon. And again, lower supply and growing demand equals higher price. Now, as number 11, as bubble fever takes over, gold will become a shining investment star in an otherwise very grim investment landscape. Now, he said he's going to give us 12, but that only numbers 11. All right, so gold then is a very good place to put your money. Silver is an even better place to put your money, to park it for right now. Not only is it going to increase, not only is there the potential of arbitrage, but also it gives you a safe haven to park it, which will keep up with inflation. Gold will at least move with the price of inflation. It may not have any real profit involved in it, but it will keep you from losing money to inflation, and inflation is going to be a killer. Now, there's another factor that comes into view here that I want to pass on to you concerning real estate. I mentioned this to you once before, but I knew an old lady here in the Ozarks, and she bought a house. She bought this house for $65,000, and she paid $5,000 down. Following the biblical provision of 7 years, she did this last year in 2005. She's paying it off over 6 years at $10,000 a year. She bought this house for $65,000 Fed notes. $5,000 Fed notes down, $10,000 Fed notes a year. She took gold at $600 an ounce, which was 100 ounces of gold. It was actually 108.33 ounces, and she put it in a can. And she's going to take out of the can the gold every year over the next 6 years to pay for that house. And when she gets through in 6 years, there's going to be some gold left. If the price of gold stays at $600 an ounce, she'll pay out 108.33 ounces. If the price of gold goes to $1,200 an ounce, she's going to pay out something less than that, probably around 50 or 55 ounces. If the price of gold goes to $1,600 an ounce over that period of time, whatever it goes to, remember, she's going to be trading that gold in for those cheaper and cheaper Federal Reserve notes so that the guy that sold the house takes it in the shorts. And the old lady with the gold in the can makes money off of the declining value of the American dollar, which, by the way, the last time I saw was at about 82 on the index. 82 cents. Compared to about $1.32 for the euro, the euro is headed toward $2 and the dollar is headed toward 40 cents. So tuck that one away in your heart. And that's why guys like Bill Gates, he just moved several billion dollars out of dollars and into euros. Now that's Bill Gates. Now he sees that money, the dollar is getting cheaper. And there's one more, this guy Warren Buffett. He a couple of years ago, he moved out of the dollar into euros. So he was buying euros when they were closer to a dollar. And now they've increased in value to $1.32. He's made 32% on his getting out of the dollar and into euros by just moving out of one currency into another. And this guy is going to bring up this currency transaction here a little bit later as we proceed through the book called America's Bubble Economy. Remember, you can get that from Barnes & Noble. America's Bubble Economy, and it's published by John Wiley & Sons. And the author's name is John Wiedemeyer, W-I-E-D-E-M-E-R. John Wiedemeyer, America's Bubble Economy, Profit When It Pops. Be sure you get a copy. All right, our time is about up. We've got to leave it right there. So let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And before I sign off, if any of you out there have any source for Indian Black Salve, let me know, would you? The Indian Black Salve. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's about up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.